eat this stuff. Tampa Bay's Tan Talk Radio Network.
Why do so many people reject science? Let's find out right now on the Atheist Forum.
You are about to enter the no superstition zone of rational thinking and intellectual curiosity here on the Atheist Forum. Standing by for your questions or comments at 727-441-3000, where you can talk to a real live atheist here on Tan Talk 1340.
Given the staggering ways that science has changed our lives from living in the field and the trees and being hunter-gatherers to living in civilized societies, improbable as it may seem, some of us still reject science. Well, certain disciplines, that is. More specifically, the science of evolution and the science of climatology. But why? Why are these sciences still suspect to so many people in our culture? We're going to talk about that right here, right now on the Atheist Forum, and you're welcome to join us at 727-441-3000. Or if you're out of the area, call us toll-free at 866-826-1340. You're welcome to insult an atheist for $2. We call ourselves the voice of reason for the entire state of Florida. We are the Atheist Forum. We are me, Ed Golly. I'm joined in the studio by Jim Peterson and Joe Reinhardt. And with us from Ormond by the Sea is Jim Strayer. Jim, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
I'm glad to be here.
Jim is a retired biology teacher from Michigan. I believe you taught primarily in the junior college system in Michigan.
That's true.
And you probably are thrilled to see the way that Scott Pruitt is handling the EPA and maybe saw the nominee that Trump wants to put on the to submit as his top environmental advisor, a woman named Kathleen White. Jim, I'm at a loss. I can't figure it out. Why is it that so many people in our culture are suspect of these two particular disciplines, climate change, when we can literally see it happening before our eyes, and evolution, when the evidence is so overwhelming that it is no longer a theory in the way that most people think of it? It is how we came to be, and the scientific community understands that, but people still want to reject it.
Well, the problem is, of course, is that the people on the other side can almost always find somebody, even some scientists, who will say that we're wrong. And they have a choice to believe either side because they don't understand what's going on with scientific principles. We obviously need to start believing scientific evidence because, well, prayer isn't working. We have a natural disaster, and after the disaster, then there's prayers. And we have another natural disaster, and then some more prayers. But there are articles printed, monthly and yearly, great articles telling people how to prepare for these disasters.
Maybe we should start praying before the disaster and keep from happening. Would that work?
I think they do. They want the storms to miss them. But you see, so many times we have people that are, even people in their 60s, that were still young enough back when important things are happening about science that they don't remember it. Just let me give you a couple of examples. Back in 1962... we found out that how dangerous lead was in the environment, and it was being put into the environment by tetraethyl lead from gasoline. But the oil companies hired a scientist, a guy named Kehoe, to refute everything that the scientists were saying about that. So it took over 20 years before the United States government finally got around to saying that we've got to get rid of the tetraethyl lead. And only then, because the U.S. Army said, you know, this is dangerous stuff. The Navy said this is dangerous stuff. Other environmental groups said it. So eventually the government had to come down on these people and get rid of the tetraethyl lead. There is no level of lead that is not dangerous to human development, the human brain. There's no minimal amount. It's all, but it was allowed to go on for 20 years because the oil company hired people to give the general public different information. And that's just one example. Back in the 60s, it also came up about asbestos, how dangerous asbestos was. But asbestos was being used in all kinds of industrial things. And the people that were producing asbestos and using it didn't want to give it up. And here's a basic principle, that the people that are making money from something like tetraethyl lead or asbestos simply do not care if people die. They don't care.
You know,
they're making profits from those things. It's more important to them. And it isn't as though they don't know. Remember, or maybe you don't remember, many of you, I know, are too young, but when the cigarette problem came up about people dying from nicotine, and they had all of the a congressional meeting where they had the leaders of the cigarette companies come and testify, every one of them lied. Every one of them said, you know, there's no harm in cigarettes. But, of course, we've proven that they are very dangerous. But the people who were manufacturing cigarettes then and now, they simply don't care if people get sick and die from their product, you know. So now when we come along with global warming, and we've got the same thing going on, we've got politicians that are accepting the word of people who say they're scientific who aren't, and distributing that information to the general public. And especially with the way we run our news medias nowadays, how many people that are listening to this program actually would listen to a National Geographic program on weather, or a science program on weather, or the local papers have been printing this stuff for years. The Orlando Sentinel, the papers in Tampa, and New York Times, and the Chicago Tribune, all those papers have been giving the correct information. It isn't though the information isn't out there. It's just that the publicity and propaganda from the other side is something that's easier to accept.
President, Joe, you were going to say something.
Oh, I was going to say about the irony of the injustice involved. If I went out and poisoned some child, one or two of them, and caused them brain damage, justifiably, they'd put me in prison for a long time. On the other hand, if I produce a paint that poisons them by the tens of thousands, I get a bonus at the end of the year in my payroll envelope. The irony of that, again, is palpable.
Well, it also shows...
When Congress held the meetings about lead, they had this guy named Kehoe on there who was supporting the oil companies, and then they had the guy who was doing most of the research that had found out about how dangerous lead was. They were both in front of the committee, and they both gave the same information. You know, there was different information. Scientific information was out there. It's just that the cigarette or the lead producers were able to say, well, you know, yes, it's poisonous, but it's not going to hurt the general public, and we can handle the poisons in the factories and stuff where it's produced. And that was easy to accept. They told how great lead was if it was in your leather. Shoes would last longer, and how great it was for toys, you know, and people just accepted that, you know.
But isn't the real role of government, or should be the role of government, to protect us from these corporations who have a profit margin as an agenda that supersedes the health of the public, the environment, the health of their employees and their customers? Isn't that really the only defense we have against these corporations. Without government regulations, there's nobody to rein them in.
Well, you see, you got to remember, there have been some success. I mean, we were greatly successful with lead, even though it took a long time. We were successful with asbestos, even though it took a long time, too. We were successful with many things that happened in the automobile industry. I mean, the automobile industry tried to, they didn't want the any of the safety features. They didn't want,
they didn't want
to quit using asbestos to make brakes. They didn't want the catalytic converters. You know, they didn't want to stop putting ornaments on the front of the cars that were, you know, killing people that got run into. But the government finally stepped in and said, you know, you guys have got to make cars safer.
They have.
The government stepped in.
They have. Yes. Richard Nixon and the guy from Ford Motor Company who introduced the Mustang. I can't think of his name right at the moment. But they have him on tape telling Richard Nixon that they can't afford to put seat belts in cars because it will make them so much less competitive.
Yeah, that's right.
I believe that was Lee Iacocca, wasn't it?
I think it was, yeah. Yeah.
They did it with seat belts and, again, with shoulder harnesses.
More of the same, yeah.
Yeah, more of the same.
So government,
and of course, when the catalytic converters come out to protect the environment from the nitrous oxides, many people who would buy a car and realize that we were going to get less gasoline mileage if they had a catalytic converter on, they would take them off, you know?
On the other hand, they put a device on the starter that made the car hard to start, which was supposed to make it very difficult to steal them.
Yeah.
It didn't really reduce the number of cars being stolen, but if you took the number of cars sold and multiplied by $25 a piece, and then you took the number of cars that were actually, I mean, sold, and then you took the number that were stolen, it worked out to where you could give anybody whose car was stolen, you could just give them $300,000 or $400,000 and leave those things off the car altogether.
Well, another important part of the car that we've handled is the tires. I mean, if you go to a city like Orlando, they probably sell probably 40,000 tires a day. Well, that means that 40,000 tires were worn out, and that wear out is someplace. I mean, there's no such place as away stuff. So when they improved tires and made them a higher quality, they would last a lot longer than they used to, and that was a great thing for the environment. But we still have a problem with the stuff that comes off of tires when they're worn out. It's microscopic materials that are, it doesn't go away. That's why when they test air quality, one of the things they test for is particulate matter. And this is tiny, tiny pieces of materials that are floating around in the air that we all breathe. But you can collect that stuff very easily. And you can prove that to yourself by just looking at your filter in your home.
So what you're talking about is as a tire rolls down the road, it is releasing these microscopic particles into the atmosphere,
right,
which is what causes the tire to wear out, right?
Right.
Because we don't see tire tracks on them.
You can tell that if you go to some large city like New York or Chicago or something, and you'll notice that the first couple of floors in those buildings is gray.
Yeah.
That's from the wear out of tires. When you get up to the third and fourth level, you don't have to wash the windows as much because the stuff has already landed on the first floor. I mean, it's very easy to see. And what my point is, we know all of this scientific information, and we've got the same kind of scientific information when it comes to climate change.
Yes.
I mean, I've often wondered what these people use cell phones, and they know that there are probes that they're flying all around the Earth, you know, so that they can use their cell phones. Well, there's a lot of probes up there that the only thing they do is record scientific information about climate change. They can measure the temperature of the land that reflecting light. Mm-hmm. They can measure the temperature of the ocean waters. I mean, there's probably 20 probes that do nothing except gather scientific data on climate change.
I would be glad to enlighten you based on the quotes from this woman named Kathleen Hartnett White, whom President Trump will nominate as a top environmental advisor to his office, okay? Now, she says that the truth is, this is a direct quote, our bodies, blood, and bones are built of carbon. Carbon dioxide is a necessary nutrient for plant life, acting as the catalyst for the most essential energy conversion process on planet Earth, which is photosynthesis. Carbon dioxide is an odorless, invisible, harmless, and completely natural gas lacking any characteristic of a pollutant. Now, this woman is educated, Jimmy. She holds a degree from Stanford University in East Asian Studies and Comparative Literature. That's why she knows so much about science. But this woman is going to be a principal advisor if the nomination is accepted to the president on science, and doesn't know a damn thing about it. I would equate it to what I said earlier. It's like if we're made 78% of water as humans, then if we drank 9 gallons of water each day, we'd be that much better off, right?
I'd like to talk to her after she's been sitting in her car in the garage overnight, and then we could discuss how harmless CO2 is or isn't. While we're at it, we can talk about the theory of gravity after she throws herself off the 10th floor.
Well, actually, that would be carbon monoxide. But the quote itself was primarily correct. In fact, we do depend a great deal on carbon dioxide in terms of its interactions with the production of plants through photosynthesis. Nevertheless, while carbon dioxide is a could be viewed as a good thing, it is essential thing. It is a good thing, but like any other pollutant, however, a pollutant becomes a pollutant when there's too much
when
of it.
It's excessive, yeah.
Yeah. So that's the principal problem, which she doesn't seem to recognize. Carbon dioxide comes from the burning of fossil fuels.
Jim was saying earlier about the skeptics about all these other issues that we faced. She is critical of the EPA under Obama, the previous administration. She called it the Imperial EPA. She is a senior fellow at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, which is a conservative think tank that has received funding from fossil fuel companies that include the Koch Industries, ExxonMobil, and Chevron. So clearly the woman has an agenda that has nothing to do with protecting the public or combating climate change. She's trying to protect her income and retirement package.
That seems to affect her objectivity.
Yes.
Well, in biology, there's always been natural cycles that we refer to. And the carbon dioxide cycle is one, and the oxygen cycle is another one. And there are different cycles that are they're very important. We do know how much carbon dioxide plants take in. We do know how much the ocean absorbs. We know where the carbon dioxide cycle is. The problem is, as has already been stated, when you produce more carbon dioxide than the natural cycle has, then you have a problem. But there is one thing I think is really important to me, and that is that all the carbon that we're talking about in natural gas, coal, and oil was underground for something like 600 million years. And the planet was functioning very nicely with all these natural cycles going on. And then when we started taking that carbon dioxide out from under the ground, or the carbon from underground in the form of oil and coal and natural gas, then that became extra carbon dioxide. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how dumb you'd have to be to not understand that if you have something that's been underground for 600 million years and you release it in a matter of 15 or 20 or 100 years, that it's not going to cause a problem? I mean, those are people who haven't got any basic knowledge of biological cycles or the life cycles. I mean, I would suggest that this woman just pick up a couple copies of the National Geographic. You don't have to read scientific magazines. You don't have to. All you have to do is, once in a while I have somebody say to me, they'll say, well, that's just your opinion. And I say, no, it's not my opinion. I can tell you where I get my sources. I can tell you where I get my sources. Can you tell me? And almost always they can't. Somebody should have asked her where she got her sources.
No, they'll say that the climate is just always in a mode of change, one way
but
or another.
Isn't.
But it isn't. And something needs to be a catalyst when you have the change, the kind of change that we're literally seeing right now. There needs to be a catalyst, right? And if it is a heavy period of volcanic activity or a lot of solar radiation or the Earth's orbit gets closer to the sun, then you have a catalyst that will cause a change in the environment. But when none of those things are present, what adds that extra carbon into the atmosphere? And it is what you said. It's the release of it from those fossil fuels.
Ed, we are the catalyst.
Yes.
But the climate deniers say,
oh, no, it just always changes by itself. It's just changing. You know, we used to be in an ice age. Right?
Is it true that most species fail to survive because they can't adapt to climate? Is that not the cause of more extinctions than any other source in nature? I read that somewhere.
One of the interesting things is that actually, as far as cycles are concerned, the Earth is in a cooling cycle. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't matter. What we're doing is so dangerous that it's overbalancing the natural cooling cycle. We've upset the natural theme of things by adding all this carbon to the environment. The National Geographic a couple of years ago gave a great example. They said, supposing you turn on your faucets in your bathtub and just let them run. Well, the bathtub will eventually get fuller and fuller and fuller, and it finally will come to the drain that lets off the excess. But if you let your water keep running, pretty soon that drain won't handle it, and your bathtub will overflow. And they said that's the condition we're in right now. We're continually adding carbon dioxide, and by the way, and a lot of other pollutants, to the air all the... Wow. And once they're there, once these things are not underground but are above ground, there's no place that we call away. There's no such place as away.
Well, but
it's just another place.
Can't the trees in the rainforest absorb this carbon dioxide?
But only a small portion of it. They absorb around 50% of the because of the natural cycle. But there's 50% that doesn't get recycled because of forests and the ocean and those things. That's what we have to worry about, and that's what's causing the climate changes.
And it's important to remember also that the period during which we have used up all this fossil fuel, the coal and oil, didn't really begin until about 1800 or so with the Industrial Revolution and the founding of oil in Pennsylvania in 1850. And since then, we have taken out some 500 million years' worth of fossil fuel from the ground and put it up in the air. This is bound to have some sort of effect, wouldn't you think?
Well, you know, what I like to say, one of the things that goes along with this, is at the same time our population is increasing. From those 1850s that you were talking about, just imagine what I think the population back then on Earth was something like 2 billion. Now it's 7 billion. And those 7 billion people all want to have the normal things in life, like cell phones and cars, and, you know. So we continually pull the stuff out from underground at a much higher rate than we were in the past and add it to the environment. And the people that I know that have talked to and studied these things say that if we were to really start now and really do a lot of stuff to try to get things back to normal, that we would still fail.
Jim, stay with us. We're going to take just a short break to let our listeners know more about Atheists of Florida, which is the organization that sponsors this program, and then we'll be back to talk with you more. So if you stay with us, we'll be right back. Atheists of Florida is a nonprofit membership organization founded in 1992. For over 25 years, Atheists of Florida has brought atheists together to address state-church separation issues, provide legal assistance in cases of religious discrimination in employment or educational institutions, help atheists meet others who want to live their lives free of religion, and produce the Atheist Forum. For membership information, visit our website at atheistsofflorida.com, where you'll find our newsletters, annual reports, statement of purpose, and information about meetings and events. That's atheistsofflorida.com. 7:30 on WTAN, TAN Talk 1340. If you'd like to join us, 441-3000. If you're out of the area, 866-826-1340. Jim Strayer, you still with us?
Yeah.
Go ahead, Jimmy.
Great.
You know, there is another thing I'd like to mention, that there are many facets of the climate change that are being studied that a lot of people really don't know about, that are really affecting the Earth. People are studying the migration of animals and the insect controls and the effect on soils and things like the amount of moisture that's in clouds and the melting glaciers and even the fact that mushrooms are growing different and the ocean salinity is changing. And, you know, a lot of scientists are worried about the ocean currents.
Right.
You know, these things are all being studied at the same time, but a lot of people have the idea that we're just talking about, you know, ocean levels rising. Well, that's just one of the things.
Yeah, things like malaria and dengue fever, those are all moving north as the climate warms because the mosquitoes and the insects that carry them can survive in those temperatures now.
And it's important to remember that the Earth is a unitary system. So if you recall our previous conversation about particulates from tires, all those particulates that end up on the inside and outside of buildings, for instance, eventually wash into the sea. And they are a form of pollution. And of course, this is happening all around the world, and not only with tires, but all kinds of chemicals and various kinds of solids that end up in the sea. And it is the sea who is largely responsible for the production of oxygen through the phytoplankton, and that we need to be very, very concerned about. And in addition to all the other problems that we've just touched on here, is the one of the soil, the topsoils are losing their potency and their effectiveness through overfarming, because of overpopulation. It's all interrelated. And so what we really need to do is to convince people that they need to change their perspective, their worldview, their way of thinking. Because if we don't, then we're going to be in a kind of trouble that most people can't even imagine.
Mother Nature will take care of it for us.
Yes, she will.
Yeah, I think
you're
right.
Not the way you might like.
Jim, you've read the books published by Abeka that are for the for homeschooling, I think, and
sure.
Private schools.
Sure. Yes, I got copies of all of them. Yeah.
And the thing that struck me the most of all the things you told me about it was that it says if the science disagrees with the Bible, reject the science and accept the Bible. Do you see a connection between the effort by the religious right and the conservatives to privatize the school system so that these textbooks can really just redefine science as nothing more than bad guesswork?
Well, you have to remember, if you can get somebody to believe what's in the Bible, then you can get them to believe anything. You know, think about that. Now, I have actually known some people quite well who went through some of the Ibeka's school education system. And the ones that I know, when they got through that system, they did not believe it. I mean, they actually, after going through 8 years of the Abeka's books, they were smart enough to say there's something wrong here, and they disregarded it. But there's a lot of those kids that go through that don't disregard it, and they believe the things that they're hearing from those instructors to be true. And some of the stories are, you know, incredible. And of course we can't stop them from printing Abeka books and many of the other ones. So the kids are going to be coming across that all the time. We just have to count on the fact that someplace during their growing up, they're going to run across a radio program like the one they're listening to now. That may, you know, set off a light. You know, one of the stories that I like to tell is the two guys that took a trip around the world back in the 1800s. One of them was Charles Darwin, and the other one was Fitzroy. And when they started out, they were both very religious young men in their early 20s, and they took the trip to prove that everything the Bible said was true. But at the end of that five-year trip, Charles Darwin realized that that everything in the Bible was wrong. But Fitzroy never quit believing in the Bible. And I think that's what we're up against now. If you have people who have the ability to change, when they learn something new, we have a chance. But if you have people that can learn something new and they can't change, then we're in serious trouble.
Yeah, the ability to change one's mind when they're presented with better evidence is a, I hate to call it a skill, but it's a trait that a lot of people just simply do not possess. But it definitely is a, I think, a character benefit. I'm happy to
think
change
about
my
this
mind, given better evidence.
He and Charles Darwin had exactly the same amount of scientific evidence after taking that trip. And yet Fitzroy never gave up on believing the Bible. And I think that's one of our problems today. We have a religious organizations that are able to convince people to not change their mind even if they have scientific evidence.
Oh, yeah. Faith is a virtue that exceeds knowledge. Our quote for the day is a good time, and that's Martin Luther, the original Martin Luther, who said that reason is the enemy of faith. He goes on to say in other quotes that, you know, we ought to take the sword or the whip or whatever it takes to disabuse people of their knowledge and get them to accept faith. Religion, I think, is the only institution I know of that considers the absence of knowledge, that considers ignorance to be an accomplishment.
Virtue.
Jim, you told me about your grandson a few months ago, and I was very impressed with that whole situation that he's dealing with, and his involvement with the universities and trying to recruit people that are exceptionally well educated about these issues. And I wonder if you could just take a few moments to kind of expand on that for us and tell us.
Well, one of the things that I was really interested in, because it was so far from the way that I had to get my education, was how many universities are recruiting very bright young people to come to their universities and paying the full scale for them. I mean, my grandson was offered monetary deals at three major universities, and he chose Vanderbilt finally, but he was offered the University of Michigan and a few other ones too. And these colleges, their tuition is usually something like $55,000 a year, and when they get into the doctor programs, it goes up even higher. And they're paying the full share for these kids. I mean, I call them kids. Most of them, you know, when they start being recruited, they've gone through 4 years of or at least a couple of years of undergraduate work. And then they will have done enough something in their undergraduate work where the colleges will find out about them. And when I asked my grandson about that, and of course, as a granddad, I thought he was the smartest kid in the world. Well, it turns out that he says he's not. He says that when he would be invited to some of these colleges, like when he was invited out to the University of Colorado, I said, gee, that must have been nice. He said, yeah, I met some nice people. There were 10 of us. And I said, you mean the college invited 10 people out there, paid their airfare, paid their room and board, paid, you know, to recruit these people to come to the university? And he said, yeah, there were 6 girls and 4 guys. And he said, you know, we were all in the same boat, all deciding if they wanted to go there or not, you know. And I was thinking, you know, maybe there's some hope when colleges will pay a lot of money to get young people to come to school and be involved in those things, and they're paying as much as they're paying some of the football players. Imagine that. You know,
but
maybe
then
there's hope. Yeah. My problem with that is when I looked up The other day I looked up Vassar, just for the heck of it, to see what was going on at that college. Their tuition for undergraduate work is something like $49,000 a year. And they have 60% females and 40% males at that school. And I got to thinking, I wonder if any of those people have ever been in a Walmart. You know? And I thought, that could be some of our problem, that we do have a lot of really highly educated people in the country in all fields. It doesn't matter what the field is. It doesn't matter if they're authors or actors or singers. Whatever. There's a lot of really intelligent people. But they're disconnected from a lot of ordinary people like me, you know?
Sure. They aren't the people I hear on the radio in the morning that say that it's virtually impossible for the human species to have any effect on climate whatsoever. It's utterly laughable and absurd, right? And
these wouldn't it be fun to, if you could, just to say to that person, where did you get that information?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're on the radio now, and we're saying that. but
we can tell where we're getting our information.
That's true, exactly. We need to figure out ways that we can reach other people, ordinary people, as we characterize ourselves.
I agree with you.
To be able to make a scientific perspective the standard of our culture instead of simply an emotional response.
Well, now, as my years of teaching, I mean, I had some examples of things I would teach students that had to do with biological principles. And some students would disagree with me, and I could show them the exact information from textbooks or other sources, and they would say things like, I don't care what that says, I don't believe it.
Jesus.
You know,
my man made up, and I don't want to be confused by the facts.
Right.
And well, then
one student said to me, my grandpa told me that, and my grandpa doesn't lie to me, so it's the truth.
It could be honest.
So there was
that's
this textbook in front of him, which meant nothing, but what his grandpa said meant everything. You know?
It's possible to be wrong without lying.
Well, there's another thing I want to just mention to you guys that I did just for the... I did this a few years ago, actually, when all this was coming up about climate change, and I wanted to get some information, and I thought, well, who are the people who are doing all these research? So I started a search for colleges and universities and private institutions that are actually doing scientific information on climate change. It took me a couple hours a day for about 3 days, but I came up with 83 organizations from all over the world. London, Tokyo, Paris, United States, major colleges all over and private institutions. So there are people all over the world that are studying the climate thing. When I hear some senator or something from the United States acting like they know everything, I'm thinking, you know, you're comparing yourself with 85 institutions around the world that are studying this, you know.
But then I hear the argument that the only reason they're studying it is to get grants to study it so they can line their pockets.
But think about that. Can you imagine somebody being dumb enough to think that there's a conspiracy amongst 83 worldwide organizations?
Yes, I can. I can imagine.
You don't see the first email between them.
A lot of these people don't get grants.
And a conspiracy that's been found out by a small group of plucky energy companies.
Mm-hmm. With no evidence. You know, all these people would need to intercommunicate different languages and different disciplines, and yet you don't see any of it. Nobody ever produces an email between a student in Czechoslovakia doing a study and somebody in Colorado saying, let's falsify this so we can get more grants and more money to do the studies.
We're still,
see, my problem with this is that sometimes they don't have to falsify it. They can just put a different spin on it. You know? And if you're an ordinary person, sometimes the propaganda is easy to accept.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, it seems to me that even if you were a corrupt individual and trolling for grants, as they allege, you would be found out because science is one of those unique self-correcting institutions that if you make a statement about something, other people will be looking into it. They'll be looking to find fault with it. That's the principal function of science, is to be able to examine various propositions and to say, well, there's something wrong with this or that, some function that doesn't quite fit.
Right.
And thus you're called upon to come up with an explanation for that.
And what percentage of these studies result in the same conclusion?
And we continuously
refine
it. I think
that's a really important, really important point. And that's why I think we need to have people who will challenge these people more often. When they make some statements, we need to have newscasters or somebody who will just say, where did you get your information?
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's the only way you can get the different sources of information compared.
That's right. 441-3000 if you'd like to join the conversation here on TAN Talk 1340. We're on with Jim Strayer from Ormond by the Sea. You survived the hurricane, I presume, in your bunker. But
you know why I survived it? Because I believed the stuff I was getting from the community, and I got aluminum
shutters up.
Hurricane shutters on every window in my house.
You buy that science, will you?
But you know, when I saw these three hurricanes all in one picture from space, and they're all like 4 and 5 level hurricanes, I thought to myself, this is going to be the norm from this point forward. This isn't just some fluke. This is what we're going to be dealing with practically every season now, because it seems like every day the weather report is, we're right up where our record high temperatures are for today, or we might break it today, day after day, month after month. And I think, well, that's the result. This is what the climatologists have been telling us is going to happen, and now we're seeing it happen. I mean, I realize if the El Nino or Nina could alter that for a year or two, but of course, climatology is like a multi-decade a measurement of the Earth's weather, and
yeah, you know that the National Geographic puts out a climate issue every once in a while. And the last climate issue that I remember seeing was 2 years ago, and they were giving advice to people who live in California how to prepare for fires.
Isn't that
just 2 years ago? And they were saying, you know, you guys are going to be in trouble. You better start preparing, not just your homes, but your communities. You know, for fires that are bigger than you've ever seen. And that was 2 years ago that was printed. Huh?
Well, it was the third week of Lyndon Johnson's administration when he warned us about the consequences of climate change due to excessive carbon emissions.
There's another problem I think we have in this country, is a lot of people think that what's going on in this country is the standard of what's going on in the whole world. I mean, the whole world is suffering from climate change. I mean, there are.
You mean the Paris Accord wasn't about?
and there are floods, and there, you know, but people act like, well, that we're having hurricanes in Florida. Remember, there's bad things going on the whole world. You know?
No, I mean, I was stunned when I heard our president imply that the Paris Accords were somehow designed strictly to advance the interests of the people of Paris, and this is about the whole world. You know, it just happened to take place in Paris. I thought, how can this guy be any dumber?
Well, we're finding that out every day.
You'd have to go to school to study to be dumber.
Pete, do we have a call on? Let's listen in and see who called up. Caller, go ahead, talk to us. You're on with the Atheist Forum.
Hey, Ed, this is David Williamson with Free Flow, if you guys have time to
goody.
Talk about that.
I sure do. A few moments, and
good.
If you've been listening and you have any questions, comments, or insults for Jim Strayer, jump in on that
I think
one,
you
too.
Guys, I think you guys are atheisting correctly. Some people might say that this is not a topic for atheists, but it is most certainly a topic for humanists, and I think most atheists and even religious people are often humanists, and this is an important topic. So I appreciate you guys talking about it. I have nothing to add. I'm not an expert in it, except for when it comes into the classroom when we try to make sure that climate change is actually taught. But I guess we first ought to get the government in Florida to recognize that it exists again.
Yeah, right.
That's a good point.
Our governor in particular.
Yes.
Can't talk about it.
Yeah.
It'll go away.
That's right. All right, so Free Flow comes up this weekend?
Yeah. So we've got Free Thought Florida, which is the now biennial conference of the Florida Humanist Association, and that's at freeflow.org, F-R-E-E-F-L-O. www.doubletreehotel.org. And it's at the Orlando, at the Doubletree Hotel near the Orlando International Airport, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I was actually putting the finishing touches on the program this evening. We had to add a whole other page to the program because we got so many speakers this year. We've got nearly 250 people registered so far with room for more. So we've opened up single-day registration for Saturday speaker access or Sunday speaker access if you can't be there the whole weekend. And but if folks want to join us for dinner on Saturday night with the American Heretics Comedy Tour, they need to register by Tuesday because we've got to turn in our final numbers to the restaurant for the banquet on Saturday night. And the karaoke song list was just posted on the Free Flow Facebook page, so I expect each of you to go pick a song and start singing in the car this week and make sure you're ready for that. And there's also a costume party, which will be judged by Cy Babe, Seth Andrews of the Thinking Atheist podcast, and Lucian Greaves, co-founder of the Satanic Temple. So it's the best time you can have with your clothes on, and we'll see how that goes.
Well, thanks, David. Thanks for bringing us up to date on that, and we'll be over there see you.
And you can reassure us it's all good stuff, right?
Yes.
It is. Most people have their clothes on, too. So.
Great. Thanks a lot.
You bet, guys. Have a great show.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Jim, I understand that if the sea level rises 3 feet, it will cover every delta in the world, the Mekong Delta, the New Orleans Delta, Bangladesh, and so on. And, of course, that's a highly productive region of the all of these deltas are highly productive regions for food, and millions of people live in them that will then need to move inland to places that are already occupied and already having water shortages.
See, that's one of the problems. Even with the articles that are in the National Geographic, they will tell a scenario that's going to happen, let's say, in 100 years or even 50 years. And a lot of people will read that and they'll say, well, that's 50 years. I don't have to worry about that.
Same thing with the national debt, right? We don't have to pay it off.
We've got to have the scientists start talking about tomorrow and next week, you know, and not 20 years from now, 50 years from now. They got to say, okay, if it's going to rise 3 feet in 100 years, it's going to be a foot in 20 years, you know, which is a tremendous amount.
Well, fortunately, we do have some assistance currently from Mother Nature in the form of hurricanes, fires in California, droughts in many places. We're seeing all kinds of phenomena that are very directly related to climate change and, in general, are very pernicious to human life. So I think as long as we study these matters carefully and are able to point to various problems of this nature, we can also connect it very directly to the whole theory of climate change and why it is that people should address that and change government policies and change their personal policy and outlook. Many things have to change, and we have to do it very soon. That much seems
the problem is with people like Scott Pruitt in the EPA trying to dismantle it, he's turning us back, what, maybe 10 to 30 years, and that's his objective, because all he cares about is the profits, the immediate P&L statement for the corporations that sponsor him and want him taking over the government to dismantle all the advances that we've made in recognizing and dealing with climate change. Say something.
We may have a really difficult time recovering from this presidency.
Indeed.
Yeah, the damage could be generational.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's already done enough damage with a number of things that would be really difficult to reverse.
In your opinion, is it too late?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty
somber
thought.
Too late for the weather or too late for Trump?
We've already got enough stuff in the atmosphere that we can't get rid of. It's there. And that's going to continue to affect things for years to come. And we keep adding to it. Even if we stop right now, we still have enough extra stuff in the environment that would keep changing climates for some time.
At the risk,
what are the chances of stopping using coal and oil and natural gas, or even reducing it very much? You know,
at the risk of sounding very repetitive, because I've said this many times, but if you think that the disparate interests on a global scale are going to get together to solve the problem of global warming, you need to take yourself to Easter Island and count the trees.
But they did do that in Paris, right? And then we get this knucklehead in who said, oh, we're not going to deal with that. That's what's so incredible. I thought it would be 20 years before we would see governments really step up to the plate, recognize the problem, and start to address it, make commitments to address it. And
We should remember the situation is, from a political standpoint, not entirely hopeless, because the people of Europe and much of the rest of the world understand the problem, can see the problem, and are undertaking vast changes in their societies. Just today it was announced that China was aiming to restrict its car production just to electric cars, many of which would be exported. The same is true for India, which has gone solar in a big way. And, of course, Europe has undertaken to put solar panels in whole countries now, like Norway, find themselves being powered by solar energy. So there's a lot that's going on. People are addressing various of these issues in various ways. It would be nice to be able to do it in a coordinated fashion through the UN, but unfortunately we can't seem to due mainly to the United States.
Jim, don't put all the blame on the rest of the world. Even St. Petersburg has made the commitment go green by like 2050.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are a certain school of thought that I think runs along the lines that if we end up with 1 or 2 billion fewer people than we have now, that the planet will be better off, and that the global warming problem will solve itself, basically because we'll have lost large numbers of the third world. And we don't really need the third world. All we want is their raw materials. Yeah. So it benefits a certain segment of the society if those people are kind enough to simply shuffle off the planet.
But the third world people think that they'd be a lot better off if we were so
diverse. They're so selfish.
Yeah. What's the matter with those people?
All right, Jim, we're just getting to the end of the program. If you have any final comments or insults you'd like to elucidate, this is the time
well,
to do
know,
it.
One advantage I've got over a lot of people is that I'm really old.
I don't believe that.
And if things don't get better in a few years, I guess it isn't going to mean a lot to me because I won't be here.
Yeah. All right, I'll show you.
But that, you know, that's the thing. There's no substitute for experience.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, I worry about the people who are actually in their 30s and 40s.
Yes.
Deal
with this stuff.
They're the ones that are going to suffer the most, I think.
And I think they know it, which is why they are the ones that are the environmentally conscious generation.
Yeah.
Right? But we certainly appreciate the fact that you speak with greater objectivity than many. So what you say matters.
And greater authority.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Jim Strayer, thank you very much for joining us this week.
Okay.
I look forward to having you back on some future programs here.
I'll be signing off now, and I've really enjoyed it.
Great. So have we.
Okay. So long.
Thanks, Jim.
Remember to visit our website at the Atheists of Florida at talk.aof.ngo. That's all for tonight. Hope you'll join us again next week on the Atheist Forum. So now, along with Jim Peterson and Joe Reinhardt, I'm Ed Golly, reminding you, if the story seems a little too implausible to be true, don't believe it just because some cretin wrote it down.
Make them prove it.
You have been listening to the Atheist Forum. To learn more about Atheists of Florida, visit our website at atheistsofflorida.com. Continue the discussion on our website, talk.aof.ngo. Join us again next Sunday for another edition of the Atheist Forum here on TAN Talk 1340.